the regularly scheduled meeting of the Utah State Tax Commission. Today is May 10th, 2012. It is 10 a.m. I note that the meeting is normally scheduled for 9 a.m., but due to scheduling conflicts, we're starting at 10 a.m. I'm Commissioner Mark Johnson. With me on the stand here are Commissioners Darcy Dixon and Michael Cragen. Also with us here is the Executive Director, Barry Conover. Commission Chair Bruce Johnson is attending by phone from parts unknown. Unless anybody knows where Washington, D.C. is, then it's not unknown. I will be conducting this meeting. We will begin by taking any public comment from individuals or groups wishing to address the commissioners. We do have a written public comment. I will read that into the record and then maybe have Barry Conover respond. It is from Mark Rex, and the subject is accepting email. That's what he's talking about, General, my mistake. It says, "Dear Tax Commission members, I am a full-time librarian at a major library in the Salt Lake City area. This year's tax policy of providing no paper forms or instruction booklets has provoked daily patron complaints and had caused hardship for patrons who still wish to have these on paper. Many of these patrons are senior citizens or the homeless or others who cannot or won't use computer 7, I don't know what that means, at the library. I am aware that it is desirable and more efficient to file online, but I would urge you to consider printing and providing to libraries at least a limited number of Form TC-40 and its instruction booklet for the next tax year. Finally, I note that the library printing budget has gone up substantially to pay for the cost of printing the forms and the booklets for patrons. I am concerned that the cost cutting at the state end is getting unfairly passed on to the local taxpayer when it should come out of state revenues. Thank you for your consideration in this matter, Mark Rex." Do you want to respond to that?
Yes, Commissioner, thank you. This is Barry Conover, Executive Director. When I received this email from Commissioner Cragen, I followed up with Mark. I called him and spoke to him at the library. I explained to him what the circumstances surrounding the decision that was made not to generate returns and instructions on paper. I then asked him if the library had received from us two publications or two email notifications, I should have said, one in the early part of January and the other one later on. And he said not to his knowledge that they had received that. This included the bulletin that said that we would not be supplying the folks the returns at the library and other areas. And we also gave them a PDF bulletin and a poster in which the information was available. We then, in speaking with, I think, Commissioner Dixon as well, I regenerated that particular email. We put it a more prominent place on the poster where they could call and get a booklet mailed to them or a form mailed to them. We did that. Randolph Prowitt of our processing division sent them that day on the 11th to Mark at his email address. I called Mark again on the 13th, asking if he'd received it and if that was helpful, and he was very appreciative. He said it was very helpful and that they had posted it, and it gave them an opportunity to say to the patrons, yes, call this number and they will mail you a return. And so that's the response to that particular inquiry.
Just really quickly, Director Conover, this is Commissioner Dixon. What will be the procedure for next year, then, next year's tax year? Do you have any idea on that?
We will do the same thing, but we will make it more prominent. Right now, for example, our numbers are showing, and I should get a report again today of the 10-day report. We're getting about 85% electronic file returns. Only 2,400 10 days ago we received of tax returns that we mailed out. And so, but we have received over 100,000 paper returns, and most of those have come off our website where they have printed them off the website, or they have taken them to through their application software and printed them out and mailed them instead of filed electronically. So
it'll be the same thing, mailing them a giant poster that they can post up
exactly.
At a certain location.
And then we also did, followed your counsel too, we went to the, like for example, the rec centers and the places. We also found those, we worked with our property tax division, and the processing division also emailed on that third go-round.
Great.
Out to all those other recreation centers and those types of places with the counties.
And we should note in record why the recreation centers, because a lot of times they have computer banks
right.
inside the recreation
centers. We'd already mailed it to them previously, but we did it again, and I think it's a good thing to do. And I appreciate the response of the commission and helping us be more communicative with the public.
Thank you for handling that. We appreciate it.
My thanks as well, and I presume we don't really need to mark this as an action item. The problem's been resolved as far as we know.
Yes.
And I want to thank Denny and the Property Tax Division, Denny Lytle and the Property Tax Division, for their support as well, and for all of those who worked on this. Okay, the next item was consideration of the minutes.
Yes. There was a second public comment that we needed to address also.
Oh, there was? Oh, sorry. Thank you. This is another written comment. I'm not sure who it's from, but it says, A person called the office of the commission on May 2nd and wanted his concern to be expressed in the next public meeting. He did not leave his name or contact information. He said when calling the Utah State Tax Commission number for, quote, where is my refund, quote, in brackets 1-800-662-4335, close bracket, the message states, the system is being updated and please call back in 1 minute. When you call back a minute later, it repeats the message of calling back in 1 minute. He would like to see something more accessible for the public.
Commissioner, Barry?
Yes. I had not heard about this until I had a conversation, actually came over in the booklet or the folder, and then Commissioner Cragen came to my office and shared with me these two issues again, reminded me of them, and I pulled them out. And so in the meantime, I did do some research as it related to that particular problem, and the taxpayer was correct. We did have a problem. It would say call back in 1 minute, and we had staff that had done that in testing it. We had a problem with our FTP load to our IVR system, our voice activated system. I want to let you know that this IVR system that we have is very, very old and is handled by a third party, control data. And for us to make a change to it, we can't do it in-house. And we also are finding that the data uploads to the IVR system from Gentax, sometimes there's problems. And the last problem we had is that people would call in and they would get, where's my refund? And it would say, we have not received it. But then they would call one of our people and we would look at it and said, yes, it's been processed on such and such a date. We found out that the file within the IVR system was so large that it wasn't being purged. And so we had the control data to go out and do some maintenance on that. What we would like to eventually do, and hopefully we can do that next year, I would like not to have the IVR system, where's my refund? I'd like to, because if they go on tap or if they go online, and they can go online and pick it up, they have an instantaneous response to where that refund is online. And I think we get somewhere around 43,000 phone calls, not this year, but the previous year, where's my refund on the IVR system. But yet we get tens of thousands of inquiries on the web. So what I would like to propose in our administrative side is that we would work with the practitioners, we would get some public relations with Charlie, and say if you want to know where your refund is, just get online and help them understand that. They would get a more accurate result than trying to go to the IVR system. The IVR system is old, antiquated, and it's very difficult to keep up to date.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. And this is Commissioner Dixon. Director, thank you for that information. Can you help me understand how that works with someone with a disability? I mean, sometimes when you think of someone like visually impaired or something, usually maybe they're making a phone call. How would what you're proposing work for someone who maybe has a visual impairment disability, so they're used to calling in and getting an audio rather than a...
What we would say, that we also have the TDY system, and usually a lot of those folks will call that,
okay,
that system. We would then have one of our staff who answers that, would then go online, where's my refund on the computer, and look it up for them.
Okay.
I just don't know, even if they called the regular 2000 number, and if they said that they were visually impaired, or whatever the case might be, our people are going to help them anyway. If they are, if they aren't,
okay.
We're going to answer their question for them.
All right, thank you.
So I understand from that people will still be able to call in on inquiries. I thought I heard you say that you're going to do away with that where is my refund number.
We would like to do that. We're still.
But you will have another source for them to contact.
They will have the 2200 number. They will have a number that they can call if they
Won't be dedicated specifically to refund requests, but it'll be more of a general
come back into the system. Yes.
And once they respond, then they can look up the refund issue. Okay,
yeah.
That sounds reasonable.
It's awfully hard. I mean, it's frustrating to the public, and to call in and say, where's my refund? And the system automatically says, well, we have not received it, and the guy all of a sudden goes into panic mode and says, I have sent that, and then we're going to get a phone call anyway. And when they call in to find out, yes, it has been, we received it on this day, it was processed on that day, and you should have your refund on such and such a day, then they say, well, why wasn't that on the IVR system? Well, it wasn't up to date.
Okay, thank you. Any more comments? Nobody's come in since that. We'll move on to item 3, approval of commission meeting minutes, which we will pass on today. We've had a request for further review and some potential revisions, so we will approve the minutes of Thursday, April 12th at a later date. Next item is submission of proposed rule amendments. I'll turn the time over to Commissioner Craig and to address that.
Thank you. We have a number of proposed rule amendments here, 9 of them. The first one dealing with R861-1A12, we're going to hold until a future meeting. Have some further preliminary discussions on that, so I'll draw your attention to the proposed amendments to R861-1A20. This incorporates into the rules a statutory reference that is essentially the mailbox rule, saying that if a party can demonstrate that they actually deposited in the United States mail their document, that it's deemed to be received so long as they give us a copy of it within 30 days of us notifying them that we haven't received it. Let me restate that. It's deemed to have been received on time as long as they give us a copy of it within 30 days of us telling them we didn't receive the original one. It also makes a change to make clear that appeals of actions taken by the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division have to be filed with us within 30 days. Ms. Solarzik, can you look at line 38 on this draft rule? It says an appeal of an action taken by the Motor Vehicle Division under Title 41. Should that be Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division?
This is Lynn Solarzik. It says Chapter 1A is the Motor Vehicle under 40. Where you're talking about Motor Vehicle Division under Title 41, Chapter 1A, that is them, or the Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division under Title 41, Chapter 3.
Okay,
so we're bringing in both divisions.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Thank you. All right, so this just makes clear in rule that appeals of those two divisions, which are governed by titles of the code outside of Title 59, the tax code, the appeals have to come to us within 30 days of the notice from the division, which conforms with our current practice, but we had a request from our lead administrative law judge that we change the rule to make it clear that the appeals have to be received within 30 days. The next proposed rule is, or proposed amendment is a change to R8656F6, and this is just conforming our rules to changes that have come about because of case law and because of amendments to the multi-state tax commission model rule. We have an amendment to R8659I49 that changes the deadline for the Utah Educational Savings Plan Trust to get a report to the state tax commission. It's currently due on January 31st. The UESP has asked us to change it to March 31st to give them more time to compile all the data and get it to us. I would note that UESP still has an obligation to give trust account owners a copy of their documentation by January 31st so that those trust account owners have that information available for preparation of their tax returns. Understood there might be some questions on this rule. Should we stop now and discuss those?
Any comments on this rule?
Okay. The next proposed amendment is to R865-12L14. And this comes about because of a statutory change enacted by the legislature in the 2012 general session in HB 476. Dealing with redistributions of telecommunications charges. So this rule conforms with the statute. Next, we have an amendment to R865-19S123. And this comes about because of action by the legislature in adopting House Bill 157 in the 2012 general session. This deals with the London fixing price when we're dealing with specie legal tender. If we don't have a London fixing price available for the date on which a person is purchase is made, we'll look to the most recent date that's available. And the statute did adopt, or the bill did enact into statute rulemaking authority, and so we're just acting in response to that rulemaking authority. The next amendment is R8672B2. This change comes about because of the adoption by the legislature in the 2012 general session of Senate Bill 243. Because of that bill being adopted, we are repealing this rule because the statute that authorized us to have this rule was repealed. Same thing with R8672B4. Again, repealing this section of the rules because the statute that authorizes the rule was repealed. And finally, we have an amendment to R8824-24-P66. We actually just barely adopted some amendments to this rule at our last meeting, but in the process of the public comment on that rule that we adopted, the county assessors gave us some input and asked us to make this proposed change This requires that a property tax or a property owner provide, along with their request for a review of their valuation, the evidence or documentation supporting that relief. And we've made some changes to make it clear that that evidence needs to come in at the same time as the application. The assessors are confident that by having this in place, that they will actually be able to resolve many of the appeals prior to the Board of Equalization meeting, and probably reduce the number of appeals that come to the Tax Commission because of that. So those are the proposed amendments. We have lots of folks here who are available to answer any questions if we have any. If there are no questions, I'm prepared to make a motion.
I don't see any comments. So.
All right. I would move that we forward, or that we submit these proposed amendments to the Division of Administrative Rules for publication in the Utah Register.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
I see it appears to be unanimous. Thank you, Commissioner Cragen.
Could I just mention that because we've taken this action today, we'll submit them to the Division of Administrative Rules no later than May 15th, which means that they'll be published in the June 1st edition of the Register. We'll be open for public comment, and at our first commission meeting in July, we'll be able to take action on them.
All right. Thank you again. The next item is a schedule change proposed for the appeals staff. Commissioner Dixon, I believe.
This is a carryover item from our meeting of April 12th. At that time, we were in the process of appointing a new internal audit director. And as I was going through that process as the supervising commissioner over internal audit, I went back to read some of the statutory language regarding the Office of the Commission. I'm just going to read this again into the record. It's 59-1-206, appointment of staff, and it goes on to read, the commission, which means the Tax Commission, shall appoint the following persons who are qualified, knowledgeable, and experienced in matters relating to the respective positions, exempt under Title 67, Chapter 19, Utah State Personnel Management Act, to serve at the pleasure of and who are directly accountable to the Commission, in consultation with the Governor and with the consent of the Senate, an Executive Director, B, an Administrative Secretary, C, an Internal Audit Unit, and D, an Appeals Staff. So I met with our HR division to just talk through, and about 5 years ago there was a scheduled designation created called AS, and AS applies to employees who are required by law to be exempt, employees and agencies exempt from 67-19, which is that Utah State Personnel Management Act, or employees and agencies that can set compensation and bonuses. So I brought it to my fellow commissioners whether we should consider using the Schedule AS for the internal audit unit and the appeals staff. And on April 12th, we voted to accept the Schedule AS for the internal audit unit. But our fellow commissioner, Mark Johnson, requested that we hold discussion and acceptance of the Schedule AS for the appeal staff until our commission chairman, Bruce Johnson, could participate. One, because he supervises the public information officer who supervises the appeal staff, and two, because he had to excuse himself from the meeting. So with that, the background is just whether we want to use that, and two, if we feel like it's important to use it to comply with the statute. With that, I mean, I would make a motion that we adopt Schedule AS for all new employees in the appeal staff pursuant to Utah Code Annotated Section 59-1206. And with that, if I could just add one other thing. The reason this says to all new employees is that to make it apply to current employees, we would have to offer a percent difference in salary. Let me just read this here. Employee converting from career service to schedule AS, there would have to be an offering of an administrative salary increase of at least 0.5% or the maximum rate of the current salary range to the current employees in the merit system. And that's not part of my motion. It's just to have it apply to new employees coming into the appeals section.
We have a motion for us. Any discussion?
Yes, I have a question. Looking at this schedule, I see in the benefits column that for employees that are under Schedule A, B, and Schedule A, D, they receive the full benefits package. But under Schedule AS, the benefits package is optional. Are we going to make a decision today that applies to all of the internal audit AS employees and all of the appeals staff employees, or will we be making ad hoc decisions with each hire?
It's a good question. I do have Roseanne Ricks here, who's our Managing Director of Human Resources for the State Tax Commission. So, Roseanne, maybe you could come up to the table here. I don't know that there's one way or another that's better. So, Roseanne, do you have any thoughts on that at all? Can we do it on an individual basis, or do we have to make the decision all at one time?
You can make the decision on an individual basis, and you may have employees that you hire who are temporary employees. You would probably hire them as a scheduled TL, and the same would apply. You could choose at that time whether they're benefited or not.
Okay. My sense, fellow Commissioner Cragen, would be that we would do the benefit package just as if they were a merit employee or an AD employee. It's just recognizing that Schedule AS is a little bit different area. So I would not anticipate that the benefits package would be any different than that of a merit employee to whom they're sitting side by side with, unless it's a temporary employee of 3 months or something like that. Which we would do under the TL.
Roseanne, when it says optional, and maybe you addressed it and I missed it, is it optional at our discretion or the employee's discretion?
It's at management's discretion.
It's management's mm-hmm. discretion.
And we have to write that up and put it into the personnel file, isn't that correct?
Right. It would be part of the offer to the employee that they're going to receive benefits or not.
So are you making that part of your motion that we decide here whether to include it or just do it on a ad hoc basis and see how it turns out in the future?
One thing is that we can always come back and make that a part of it. At this point, I'm comfortable that it would be on a position basis, that we would write it up, make it as part of the offer, put it in the personnel file as a, I guess, the manager over that unit, so to speak.
I think that would be my preference as well.
So then does that mean that when we fill the internal audit position, it will be Mr. Cudilla who is responsible for preparing the offer and making the offer of the optional benefits, and then for appeals unit staff, that it would be Mr. Roberts' responsibility to make the offer in those appointment letters?
And again, I think it's a good question. I would say that that's always at the the discretion and the final sign-off of the supervising commissioner, because it's still positions that answer to the commission. So I don't think it would necessarily be that appointment, the director of internal audit, but the supervising commissioner over internal audit, the supervising commissioner over the public information and overseas appeal staff would have to sign off on any final benefits offer.
I guess I wasn't exploring a decision-making process. I was just wanting to make sure that somebody was going to be responsible for getting it done.
Yes. I think they would come up with working with HR on what would be the written-up benefits offer with the job. So they would walk over to Roseanne Ricks and work with whoever she directs them to work with to write up a benefits offer. Before that offer was made, it would be reviewed with the supervising commissioner to make sure. Go ahead, Roseanne.
If I could comment, I think typically what you'll find is it will be in the job announcement. The hiring official will have made that decision in concert with the commissioner, the relevant commissioner, and then it will go out as part of the hiring announcement, the recruitment, and it will state in that recruitment whether or not the position is benefited.
Okay.
So then when the employee gets onboarded, they'll typically be onboarded through the electronic onboarding process, but all of that will have been known up front because it will be in the recruitment.
I think that's an excellent clarification and point, and very helpful. Thank you. Roseanne and I tried to connect this morning, and I didn't get to her soon enough, so that's my fault, but we wanted to try to talk through some of these details.
All right, so I would make sure I understand the motion. Well, it's to classify all new hires in the internal audit unit and appeals staff, to classify them going forth as AS employees.
Let me just clarify that. We did internal audit last meeting on April 12th.
We formalized that.
We
that
did.
Time. Okay.
Our commission chair wasn't part of the meeting, but the three of us did vote and formalize that.
Okay, thank you.
But all we need to do today is consider how it applies to the appeals unit.
And does the appeals staff include, I just forgot, the ALJs as well, or just the clerical staff?
That's my understanding. It includes the clerical and the administrative law judges.
That seems to make sense. That makes sense to me, too. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll take a vote. All in favor?
I think we're minus a second.
Oh.
We don't have seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
about
what 2 years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? I see none. That's unanimous as well. Thank you, Commissioner Dixon. Next on the agenda is Executive Director's Report, something we always look anxiously forward to.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint. I want you to know we have started, as you can probably recognize, some of the changing of the cubicles throughout the agency. We've also started the construction and almost completed the construction of the hearing room down here on the main floor. It has been painted. It looks really, really nice. We'll be changing the carpet out in the coming days. The doors are being stained. The blinds have been identified and measured and have been ordered. The hardware associated with the room has been purchased, and we have it on site, except for the mics, and the mics will be here shortly, and they'll be the same mics as we have upstairs in the hearing room that you folks have over on the commission side. It'll be the same type of a system there. The table has been ordered and received. It's I think it's a collapsible long table that I think will meet the needs of the commission. Plus, we'll have a couple of tables up front and also a rostrum for where they can testify and bring evidence in as a hearing room. So that's looking really good. We have started to take down the cubicles behind the counter. It's been kind of a startling experience to see what 17 years of housekeeping will do for you, or that lack thereof. And so we'll be scrubbing many of the cubicle walls as well as shampooing the carpets. and touching up the paint in that particular area. The doors on the end, both ends of that counter area where it's not secure, the contract has been let. I proved that. It's about $1,700. We'll have 6-foot doors with a lock on them so that only the employees that and the public that needs to be back there, which shouldn't be anyone besides the workers, will have access to that back area. That's on schedule to be completed. Up on the fourth floor, we have three phases, actually four, possibly five phases, but the first three has to do with the reconfiguration for the project of the motor vehicle. We'll have probably another 10 to 12 people coming in from FAST, and so we're working on that to get those all put together. Motor Vehicle Division has consolidated some of their workstations, and we have moved staff into where the HR staff was before Eric, and so we're capitalizing on that area. The office area that the commission has requested relative to the old internal audit large office that Maman loves, and now that he's in another office, we're going to take half of that, and with that's just waiting for contract signature, and that should be handled in the next week or so.
Director, this is Commissioner Dixon. I'd just like to follow up with you after
sure.
the meeting about that.
Absolutely.
Does that show that it takes two people to fill Amon's shoes?
Definitely. So I think we're moving along. We have some temporary people in here helping. Took a little bit of suasion on Deputy Director Scott Smith's part to get the extra help in so that people didn't feel like they were not accomplishing what they thought they could accomplish single-handedly. So that is really picked up. We have four people. So things are moving ahead of schedule. We're working with DTS, both at the telecommunications, the computer, as well as the wiring, and Tiffany Harms Jensen is doing a great job overseeing that project. Also wanted to give you an update on the Google rollout. As you all know, the state of Utah is scheduled to roll out Google email, Google Apps on May the 21st. I don't know how many of the commission staff has gone through the tutorial and the webinars, but it would be important that you all do that. It would also be important that you also go back and refresh yourself with the online videos. And there's also a written guidelines or user's manual that we will send. And I'll have Kieran Lingard send you the links to those so that you would understand that. We got encouragement this morning from Kevin Van Osdale, Director of DTS for the Tax Commission, that the week of the 21st, on the 21st, we should be giving our staff some extra study time if they're capable to do that, to go through it and make sure that they understand. In fact, if you want to set up a temporary Google account on your own, you can do that and do some of the training as you go through the videos. We do have a problem. We have a problem with security as it relates to the Internal Revenue Service. We're working with Sammy Schultz and also with John Eisner, who is from Booz Allen and Hamilton. He is the consultant, the DP consultant for the IRS, about secure emails. And it looks like the state is going to go fully encrypted emails throughout the whole state. There'll be some provisions in there to where, as we send emails amongst ourselves, we'll have the key on our machines as well as the sender's machine. It'll be kind of transparent, but we're going to secure stuff going outside of the state environment. And that's where the Internal Revenue Service has some concerns, is the cloud. They're having a hard time differentiating between cloud technology and in-house cloud technology or server technology, and the way they want to measure it. We have a list of 7 items that Jonathan Eisner has asked us to respond, not us, but the DTS to respond to. We'll be working with DTS today on those. It may be, folks, that the rollout may be delayed from the 21st, and or the tax commission may be withdrawn from that rollout on the 21st. I was talking to Ken Peterson this morning on a conference call. So it all depends on what we can get through the IRS as far as our security aspects and encryption is concerned. But I just want to give you an update on that so that you folks can be aware of what's happening, and also that you take the extra time to familiarize yourself with Google, because that's the word, that's the email of the future. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Sure.
Director, again, this is Commissioner Dixon. Thank you for that thorough update. Appreciate it. Is there, not being a techie, and I'm not, I admit it, is there any possibility that the tax commission won't go Google, but will stay some other, will stay with what we are?
No, I don't believe so. I think what they have with GME, which is the encrypted GME, it's the portion of Google Apps that is secure email. Really and truly, if you really look at it, group-wise isn't secure.
Okay.
It hasn't been, in its, even in its wildest imaginations. But with the encryption, we tested something last evening, for example, under what they call GME, Google encryption software, where Bobette Phillips of the DTS sent about five of us an email, and then we had to log in to a server, give a link to a server. We had to go in and put a password into that server, and then we're able to get that email, respond to that email, and then send it back. And so that's kind of the technology we'll be using as we look at sending data outside to taxpayers. They're going to have to do things differently. We've got to be more secure in our emails. And I think Google and GME, within Google, it's going to be what we want it to be.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Barry. Next item is, well, do you have any comments or questions, anybody, for Barry before we move on anything he's discussed? Next item will be commissioner's reports. Maybe I'll invite, if he has anything, Commissioner Chair Bruce Johnson. Anything going on with the MTC that we need to know about, or is it just another boring conference?
Very exciting.
Oh, good.
We got the two gags on some uniformity proposals. We've held some others. But basically what I want to report on most is our legislative day. I spent yesterday visiting with each of our congressional delegations on some preemption legislation that's being proposed, and touching base with them on some federal tax reform issues that they're working on that will affect the states. And I had very good meetings with Senator Lee and Senator Hatch and Representative Matheson, and I was able to visit with the staffs of Representative Bishop and Representative Javits, and we had some good discussions. So I've encouraged them to call us with any questions they have about any tax legislation if they want to know how we perceive it will affect the state of Utah, and they expressed a lot of interest in keeping those lines of communication open, so I think that was productive.
Good. Thanks for your good and hard work on that, Bruce. We appreciate it. Any other items from commissioners? Commissioner Cragen.
I just wanted to note that today is the anniversary of our executive director's birth, and to wish him many happy returns of the day.
Anybody else care to join in on that? I'll offer my condolences, but...
You know, it's a sad day when you're the oldest of all of you. I feel like a grandpa.
Well, and thanks, and again, we appreciate your long service here, Barry. Have a happy day.
Thank you.
Anything else? Do you have anything else, Commissioner Dixon? All right. With that, our next item is a closed settlement request.
We'll go into a closed session for that, and with accordingly, we will close this session and reconvene it later. Is that the proper procedure?
I'd make a motion that we go into closed session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
All right. Thanks for that clarification. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
Okay, now what we usually do is turn off the recording.
Yep. I'm getting ready to do that.
Stopping that. Thanks, Barry.